Tonight it's my pleasure to welcome back and to welcome for the first time one poet and another poet. Kim Shuck has read here at Many Rivers before. We are delighted to welcome her back. She has such a lovely biography. The parts, I mean, she's got poet, weaver, educator, etc., but she's also got doer of piles of laundry, planter of seeds, child wrangler, that sort of thing as well. Sonoma County poet Duane Big Eagle has been living here, I guess, for quite a few years.
Same house for 18 years.
There you go. So he has a BA from Berkeley. Has been publishing poetry in the mid-70s. I could say more, but I think I will let our poets say it for themselves. That's the best course with poets, I seem to think. And so please join me in welcoming Kim Shuck and Duane Big Eagle.
Here's a tip. If you want to really make Native Americans uncomfortable, make us introduce one another.
What's your name again?
Yeah.
So when
did we meet?
How way? What's up, Yinika?
Stop. That was two different languages. Yeah. It took me a moment to get switch kids. But from very much, historically, from very much similar places in the last couple generations. At least.
Both Oklahoma?
Yeah, well, you know, Osage and Pitcher. Essentially, if you stand at the top of the hill that is Osage Hills and throw a rock real hard, you could hit my grandma's house. Almost.
Almost. Yeah.
So.
Close enough.
Yeah. And then we were mentored by the same person.
Yes, Carolee Sanchez.
Carolee Sanchez.
Yeah, amazing one.
And you know, just one of my favorite people to hire whenever I have money to hire other poets.
Because one of my favorite employers.
Really good, and I pay on time.
that's
but I've learned, I was also a student of Duane's at one point.
Really?
Also what?
A student.
WordCraft?
State.
Oh, I forgot.
When you got that's employed right. by State, we came over to see who the heck had that name.
That's right. Indians, if you're Indian and you get a job teaching Indian studies or anything like that, there's a group of people who show up to check you out.
Yeah.
And,
there were
it's a good thing, though. It's a good thing, though.
Well, it is a good thing because there are a lot of people who say it and aren't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we came over to see who he was, and it's like, oh, all right. Right near Bartlesville, I know who you are. If I don't know, then I can find out right
Comedy
away.
District, Osage.
Yeah, take 2-3 phone calls. That's all it takes.
Okay. Would you like to start?
Could do. The cheaters are a new thing for me, sort of, and I'm not good at them yet. So I do that thing that we all do when we first start wearing them, is that I leave them everywhere. I think I have what? Doug has essentially put them within arm's reach in 2 different houses so that there's a pair wherever I need them, and there's an extra pair in the car in case I've lost the ones I brought with me. But they're always sort of funky.
I'm experienced. I have 55 pairs left. All of the house. I hate carrying around my neck, so I...
That's a good idea.
So, this is a brand new book. Mm-hmm. Brand new. Just had the, is it the 9th, had the opening, sort of the kickoff party for this book. It's called The Red Indian Road West. I did the beadwork on the cover. Mm-hmm. And also some poems in it. But I am not the editor.
Oh.
When we are a river, down 101 through the central coast, oak branch scrawl keeps up the conversation, rock faces, hillsides chime in, earth marks for navigation. Language is a substance of place, a vibration of weather, creak of growth, seep of dirt, crows, ravens rhyme and sift the creek beds, howl. Story from elsewhere shifts rock, asphalt, renames trade paths, become freeways. Songs mix in complicated patterns.
Nice.
You want one?
If we're going to do travel poetry, I'll do one too.
All right.
But you got another one?
I have books of them. Go ahead.
Well, maybe I'll go back. Not traveling, but revisiting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Hominy, Oklahoma, which is about the size of, what's the town out on
Drayton?
Maybe.
That town.
But it's a very unusual place because it is only partially visible. The invisible part is more interesting. This is called Inside Osage. A town crier's bell first sounds, calling dancers to get dressed and head for the arbor. Soon drums and singing will float across these wide fields. I sit for a moment on a wood-splitting stump by the low concrete porch and remember how the houses are built practically on the ground and how the rivers and creeks have their own distinct smells. How it feels to be so far from a main road that you can see 50 miles across low hills and gullies covered in prairie grass, rippling in a breeze all the way from Nebraska. Meadowlarks whistle sunlit melodies, and a single shrill hawk shriek arouses my heart. Tourists may see gas stations, farms, cattle guards across red dirt roads, and asphalt highways speeding through one-street towns. But if you look carefully, you can find another world hidden here, the invisible vertical to this horizontal land, rising up as a high school in the middle of nowhere, glimpsed in a blue flash of a thunderstorm. It's an older land where war honors are still being sung, where cooking fires still send out a warm invitation of good smells. I feel that at the dances on the evening of the third day during the last songs, when the circle of women singers stand up from their chairs and sing behind the men, drumsticks swing up like beating wings of an eagle, dancers circle then face into the singers as a shimmering column of sound and light rises up from the drum and races toward the sky. That's what I see.
Yeah. That's great. This one's called Planua. Planua. Quarter to six, and I wanted to write to you about a red bird, and then realized you don't know my stories. Knew we were years from sharing the one I needed you to hear. We're misplaced, both of us, keys in the left pocket of a borrowed jacket. Misplaced, but with time, we can find our way around to it. It's slow work. We do this word by word, each word a story, every story beaded with words, but there's no hurry because it's only quarter to six. Mm. And then I actually have another response to that. This is actually going back to Collingwood Street and Carolee's place in Collingwood. It's called Sacred Spaces. You're one of the things I didn't know about clouds on this bas-relief morning, pre-dawn with that market cross moon right there, and the tour of past your old house isn't helping today. This sleep is stirred, and the bank called to save me money, so I'm counting my fingers. Still, there are some things you can lose and regain, and I'll stand on any stage you want and say that wonder is one of them. Wonder in community. In the invisible mark of my palm on the bottom step of that house at the root of Collingwood Street.
Hmm. Invisible.
Nice.
Wind and impulse. Each moment rises up screaming into life, born or stillborn. There are some places you must not go. Hate is a stone stairway to a blank wall. There are some chances you cannot pass up. Love, a kind of readiness. The little decisions make a vision by which we come to live. You'd think that what you've done or haven't done would determine your happiness, but is that really it? Does a rabbit blinded by the headlights of a car know if he's going to run or sit still? I want to live like that blinded rabbit, piercing the darkness for the slightest wind and impulse.
On the subject of weather, making noise. It's loud weather for a week. Sometimes we just get tossed. Rain, wind muscle, everything shakes. Out on a mountain, they're climbing blind. with so many compressive current events, so much to fortify against, I'm suddenly drawn along by real bravery, drawn up, head aching from the altitude. This is loud, too, this being flung in with a hopeful thought. I follow the slope from a distance, racked with sympathy joy. It's loud, large, with slow earth contractions, the making and unmaking of land, the twisting groan of another spasm. I want to trust this impulse, tear down the crenellations, but they've rebuilt them, and more than once, a reflex, humanity maybe, piles of rock, sharpened sugar points, flaked patiently to a flint deadliness. They vanish in the blood, deniable, complicated, translucent and corrosive. But no, in this moment of expanding, without containment, we will pick a note and get really loud.
How about birthplace? I remember the Indian hospital where I was born. It's built around a courtyard with a garden and trees in the center. Years later, I would go back and wait with my mother in the high-ceilinged, white-walled reception room with the dark wooden benches where the people sat. Through the arches of the courtyard, you could see the window of the maternity ward and the bush that bloomed in late spring with fawn yellow flowers. They say a nurse held me up to that window the minute I opened my eyes. I still look for that color, a fawn yellow glint in the eyes of the woman I'm about to love. Got a love poem?
I have a love poem for Cherokee, North Carolina. And I know that hospital.
Yeah. Cherokee took it over, you know.
Yeah, we did, I know. I know we did. I remember when it wasn't ours, though, actually.
Yeah.
That
old.
It
was at IHS.
Back to Cherokee.
The Indian Health Center. IHS, you say the prayer before you go in.
It's not a healthy place to be.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Enough good people got born there, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was even a place for them.
Yeah, it was. That or my grandma.
Yeah.
A creamy lick of dogwood, redbud, wild wisteria, unmannerly, pulling some other tree down. River water seems high on the trunks. My language comes from this place. I've never seen it before. Refugee kit over one arm, I take it all in. Later a hot rain mumbles greeting. Two crepe myrtles, locust trees, annals by the pool. One, the male, stalks us from a low wall. I could sit quietly by a pond and wait for mythical creatures. I know their names. That red hawk, the giant snake. Here now I could believe in anything. Canada goose, mockingbirds, in Ellen's car, a scarlet flash, too fast, but probably a cardinal. Ever-present English sparrows. And then home. Too soon to know, but there's laundry and bills. In my hand, a medicine bundle, gift from the students. So I say a prayer and let it slip into the fire.
Got one left.
Different kind of love song?
Sure.
This is woman's work too, this washing of the dead. It never ends. Prayers and water, foam and water, and then a cliched note, a smear of dust. It's homeopathy. She's gone in every respect. Almost a cure for the person she once was, and like other cures, we never wanted to take it. Could be bitter. But there she is, in the hands of the woman who washes the dead, this true believer, a last thing I couldn't do for her.
Hmm, nice. Reminds me of that. I'd like to put a few things. This is by, this is just a line by an Inuit writer, Aitir Raytheok. Little man, all things you see around you on earth, in the sky and the waters, have life in them. Maybe I could write a couple of grandparent poems.
Yeah.
Recollection. Dark face, color of creek beds, standing in her yard, calico dress, print dress, held in the wind, waving a white handkerchief as we rode away. Goodbye, grandson, remember me. Arrows to the heart. That was a really early one. Sherman Alexie stole that last line.
Yeah.
My
Don't pull let's not pull that thread.
No, it's just my fun.
Yeah.
My grand, when I was, I came to Berkeley, I was in high school after Sputnik, and they threw a lot of money at the science and math programs in the United States, and I had a wonderful physics teacher. It was very creative. We were doing amazing things. And then I came to UC Berkeley to study physics, and I was working with the scientists who were doing the research, and our textbook was just Xerox pages because it was so new and experimental. It was wonderful. But I, all through the first semester, I kept hearing things that really sounded familiar, and I couldn't figure out where I heard that before. And they were the scientists who were doing the research. That, you know, how could I have heard it before? And I realized it was stuff I got back on the res.
Mm-hmm.
60,000 years of experience passed down very carefully, you learn a lot about the universe. My grandfather was a quantum physicist.
Mm-hmm.
I can see him now, smiling, in full dance regalia, an eagle feather fan in his hand. He's standing with the other men on the grassy field in front of the roundhouse on a sunny afternoon. Part two. Scientists have finally discovered that the intimate details of our lives are influenced by things beyond the physical world, beyond the stars, and beyond time. Part three. My grandpa knew that.
I am so tempted to read one of Linda's poems.
Yeah.
I have one right here.
Well, Linda could read her own. Come up
she
here.
She's shaking her head. She's like, no!
Got to hit one more early.
Okay.
Traveling to town. When I was very young, we always went to town in the flatbed wagon. We'd leave as soon as the day's first heat had stopped the mare's breath from forming a cloud in the air. Kids sprawled in the back among dusty bushels of corn and beans. As we rode down Main Street, the town revealed itself backwards for my sister and me to see. We loved the brick and sandstone buildings and the farmer's market with its sawdust floor. Best of all was Monkey Ward. Monkey Ward is? Montgomery Ward. Best of all was Monkey Ward with its large wood panel center room and the little wires with paper messages that flew back and forth like trained birds. We finally got to Safeway, where Grandma did the shopping, and Grandpa sat outside on the brick steps in the sunlight, watching all the grandkids. From a shady coolness on the other side of the street, the ice cream store would call to us with its banging screen door. Grandpa always had money for ice cream. We'd ride home down Main Street, licking ice cream, watching the town reveal itself backwards again in afternoon sun.
Nice.
Kids, of course, read four in the back.
It just sparked.
Okay. Okay. We can do that.
We can. I'm having an incredibly persuasive memory of coming back from Stomp Dance one time, and my dad got me a Mountain Dew and a package of orange Zingers. it's astounding. The dance is supposed to set the world back into balance, mm-hmm. which is what there are two things. There's not a whole lot that everybody has in common across the country, but nearly everybody calls themselves the people. That's what our names mean, pretty much, when they're the right names, which aren't the ones you know.
Yeah.
But which isn't because we were hiding them from you. It's because the people who are writing these things down on maps would ask the neighbors, usually the people you're in competition with. So you've got a whole continent of people who are in the jerks, the snakes, the thieves, the fish eaters, the, you know, all the way across the country. But our real names generally mean the people. And the main dance is generally to set the world back into balance. That's what they're for. It's what we're all for. This is a poem which is sort of before the dance and then the really awful snack. My father was not around enough, so he always used to give me whatever I asked for, not necessarily what was the right thing. It's called How to Be One of the People. Dad sends me a political joke through email. He's Northeastern Okie terse, can see the familiar mouth quirk, the duck behind a forehead curl, and I'm back in the 70s, hiding nightgowns, hoping I'll get Daddy's t-shirt instead. Soft white, smelling of Old Spice, pipe smoke or cigarettes, beer or cane alcohol. Dad shipped out to Nam mid-Dr. No on an aircraft carrier, a volunteer, gestured bravery, genetic possibly. Grandpa did it too, chased Rommel around North Africa. He could do trig in his head, was stationed in Germany while Dad was in high school, Loved my grandmother with a light that embarrassed my teen years. Grandpa died of lead and cadmium in the water. Dad quit smoking for my kids, but he still talks like a smoker. Pauses, licks his upper lip. Voice rumbles, reads like an Oxford Don, still feels uncomfortable in universities. I did 2 degrees for my dad. On one trip to a liquor store, I must have been around 3. The counter guy saw my blonde curls, my brown dad's black ones, and asked me if he was really mine. Later, Dad taught me how to see the funny and the sad. Gently graceful, a feature I see in my cubs, if not myself. Dad showed me how to be one of the people one night, heading from Tulsa to Pitcher in a rental car. Dark, neither of us talking, king of the road blaring on the radio, heat-sick air, the sound of tires measuring gravel.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, right?
Yes, got it. Let's see, maybe I have it right here. Unless you got another one going.
No, okay.
Driving the Oklahoma Night. We know all the roads and back roads between the football and dance towns, Hominy, Gray Horse, Pawhuska, Claremore, Tulsa, Skytook. And we travel those roads, those black, gray, and red dust ribbons of speed in a time not measured on any clock. Beams of light leap up at graded banks of the gravel road. We are ambushed by the headlights of an oil truck on a summer night. The radio plays Jimmy Rogers and Chuck Berry. We sing their songs in our own. Our faces are lit by wheat-colored light from the dashboard. Dust billows up behind us. The earth begins to move beneath us, and we are stationary under pale stars. This is how we have always moved across this land. Moonlight makes a bridge across our naked backs. The Oklahoma night wraps us up in its warmed quilt. The sweetness of our journey is purplish-red taillights disappearing in dawn's mist. We dream of those roads as if they were lifelines of curiosity, good times, and love. Same thing.
I used to get really carsick, and my grandmother, my great-grandmother actually, my dad's grandma, used to tell me that I got carsick because I was listening to the stories and we were going too fast for me to hear all of any of them. This is called Lessons on Packing Light, and it's actually for that grandma. I dream of learning checkers from Alishi, who giggled as we teased the dog with a tennis ball between moves. A mystery to me these days, who in that small town ever played tennis. I don't think I invented the ball, though. Bouncing down the Will Rogers Turnpike towards Indian housing, Graham's dog, our checkers game, that barca lounger, the exotic trappings of my father's family. Bright orange metaphor congested with dog spit, mud, Etta May's elderly giggles, the magic of a woman with 3 names. It fits so neatly into that dog's mouth.
Heritage. Stolen velocity, snared energy. I rocket past gravity's orbit, singing like the sinew on a bent bow. Why nombre que they? Come and eat, they call to me, the old ones. And they mean it, welcome. Pointing with their lips and dreams, they stand under waterfalls. Their singing is muffled by the roar. Arms uncurl into wings as they swing around on the beat. Voices carry me up. The drum moves my feet to dance on dry earth. Dust floats up around me, beneath my eyelids. What's in the blood boils and forgets, mocks me, catches me out, freezes into skeleton memory and tears my skin red. For years, nothing, not a sign, the barest image, until I realized there'll be no sign. No great revelation, only the precise movement of brown fingers, brown eyes, a love of living with distance and laughter, the act of generosity, whirl of storms, feathered winds, the return of rain falling to the earth in the night.
This one's for all the urban natives. I hear us singing. This morning's song is for those born for other people's dreams. We're so unlikely. A funny, lingering fog. Like spies, we know each other in the lines for the bank machines. While buying books or coffee, our eyes clasp and slide, no one else the wiser. We sing these morning songs at the sights of piped creeks, sometimes even at the drinking fountain, touch our faces with water and sing. I saw you singing near the art museum, stone blushing red from new light. We fell into brief duet, anonymous, loving, clandestine. It's hard to know if we were what they had in mind, planning all the while for us, not for themselves. It's such a responsibility. Things wash up on shore, dig themselves into the edges of river outlets. We can find them there. I hear you singing some mornings.
I think we're about halfway through. I wonder if the audience has any questions or thoughts or responses to what we've said so far. Yeah.
So are you published?
Not enough.
No.
No, I publish a lot of magazines and that sort of thing.
It's just an ongoing conversation.
What was the name of the poem before the last one? Do you remember?
Before the last one?
It was like the highway.
Driving the Oklahoma Night. Other questions? Anything else?
I like that one very much. I just went with it. And
I love it when people close their eyes when I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. You know, the images are going by, I can see the reflections in their eyelids.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Sometimes. Yes?
Have you read the one that you hand out sometime? A crumpled piece of paper?
Oh, yeah, okay, I can do that. I was going to say that toward the end, but...
Okay, no, that's fine. I'm just glad I didn't miss it.
Whose turn is it? Forget. Any other questions? Anybody else? Anybody? I mean, you've got two really interesting Indians here. Not that they all are. Three, actually.
Yeah, we got three.
Anything else?
You never know.
We're educational, you know. So if you have any questions, you can help with.
Maybe I have a question.
Yes.
Would you mind telling about Poets in the Schools and when Carol Lee came?
There was an organization that was formed in 1964 of poets. It started at San Francisco State University. At first, I think we were reading poetry to kids, and then suddenly, somewhere along the line, somebody got really creative and started teaching poetry to kids.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, teaching creativity, mm-hmm. which is survival, mm-hmm. if you understand what I mean. It went along pretty well, mostly white poets, until I think it was Ishmael Reed. Was given the job, took one look at it and panicked and flew out the door. And so what happened was that Carol Lee Sanchez, this amazing Laguna Pueblo and...
Laguna and Lakota,
Lakota
actually.
And Lebanese.
And Lebanese. And Scots Irish.
Yeah. Amazing woman walked in the door and said, well, I'll do it. And she took up this thing called Poets in the Schools and she had the gumption to go around the state and start visiting places and talking to schools and really, she had a vision of how it could be. And of all the people who've been directors, I think she was the one who influenced the organization the most. She saw that if a poet could make enough money, they could actually make a living at this. Mm-hmm. And so she set the fees up really high, and it's been going ever since.
Mm-hmm.
She also went around to schools that nobody had ever been to before.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable woman.
I taught today.
Yeah.
California Poets
Excellent.
In Schools, and it's a wonderful and arts-enriched curriculum
yeah.
school here in Sebastopol, but
Excellent.
I've taught it at the Juvenile Hall and what they call failing schools, which I hate that term, but they're
yeah.
underserved
yeah.
schools.
Yeah.
I mean, because of Carol Lee and you
yeah.
all, and I've met people, a young woman or a woman who lived in Pacifica who
mm-hmm.
thinks she was taught by one of the early mm-hmm. CPITS poets in Pacifica, and she, you know, she's sort of blooming now. She's
yeah.
continued
yeah.
to have poetry.
Well, I think I taught Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
I also taught a woman who sent me a rejection letter from City Lights. How do you like that?
Yeah. That's after awesome.
She had the nerve to tell me. You know, I taught her.
Some of us keep hiring you, and some of us just aren't that smart.
I guess.
Yeah, Carol used to call me her daughter, and that was really the relationship. But the program was called the Pegasus Project before it moved out of San Francisco State. And one of the subsequent directors was Devorah Major. It's interesting because I'm not involved with CPITS in any meaningful way whatsoever any longer, but everything I do ties it back together because I work with Devorah all the time. And what's that?
She's a wonderful person.
She's also a wonderful person, former poet laureate of San Francisco. And an incredible. Devorah Major. It's an incredible poet.
I published a chapbook of her.
I designed a chapbook of her, her and Opal. Yeah, absolutely. Two fabulous poets.
Yeah.
And yesterday I was substituting for Devorah at the DM Museum, so the world is very small.
Yeah.
Essentially, Carol Lee's notion was that rather the kids should write the poetry.
Rather than just being read to.
Mm-hmm. Or memorizing the canon, mm-hmm. which was also one of the early Pegasus Project things. Stuff keeps coming back around. But that was really her. Was the San Francisco Poets? I'm going to murder the name. Please step in.
Area Poets Coalition.
Right, the Bay Area Poets Coalition was one of her things as well.
Yeah.
Just an amazing woman. And the last time I was reading here, I think we were reading in honor of her.
Yeah.
Honestly, I say this, and I hope that it doesn't upset Bill. Honestly, there's lineages in Native poetry as well as in Japanese poetry. You might be familiar with the way that works. And the intriguing thing is that I think there are only two or three of them, really, because you can tie yourself to, like, Maurice Kenney or Carol Lee or, you know, there are only a couple of people. And
well, wait a minute. Cesar Vallejo? Who are you counting?
No, I know, but, I mean, I'm not saying two or three.
Okay.
I'm saying,
you know,
not as a huge number.
Yeah.
And it's worth buying and reading Carol Lee's book, honestly.
Which Bill Fartnot does.
Which Bill Fartnot published.
Well.
He also published me, but it's worth buying Carol Lee's book.
Carol Lee, I think, formed our thoughts a lot.
Yeah.
I remember having a great revelation one day saying, you know, Carol Lee, a powwow, American Indian powwow, is the cultural equivalent of a Beethoven symphony.
Mm-hmm.
She turned and said, oh, Dwayne, no, it's more. What's more? Because more people are involved in the creative process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, absolutely. And the whole thing keeps knocking on. It from the making of the regalia right to the music and through everything and bouncing babies.
Yeah.
I think you met my son when he was 2 weeks old.
Long time.
Yeah. Was it your turn?
I don't remember. Go ahead. You got one?
Or
a question.
It's not a question. This is like a bath for me.
Yeah.
So, please, I want to ask again. Please.
Louder.
Come.
Move up close.
No, please.
Move up close. Yeah.
Your voices get soft.
We do. It's. I actually believe it's an oaky thing.
Probably.
Because people will say that, and I can hit the back wall in a big room.
Yeah.
Sure.
But when I'm reading,
there's an intimacy.
Because you're pointed that way.
Is it?
Oh,
a
could
little
be.
Bit.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe.
Is that better?
So if I could ask both of you to read slower and read loud. Because I love it, because you guys are probably so used to poetry.
Yes.
And so you just think, well, we know. But this, I want to feel all of it.
Okay.
Okay.
You'll read to her.
It'd be easier if you two were.
Yeah, you want to come?
Yeah, sit over there.
Yeah. If you two could be next to each other.
We're
just going to rearrange
you.
Yeah.
Here's our request. Counter proposal. All right. Arts of Patience. We've been collecting stairs for years, stairs and the notion of stairs, and build with them like children do, just like playing with blocks. We will paint them with heart ideas, with generational hope, may yet reach the somewhere else we had in mind. We wanted so little in those days. Between the bingo and collecting funerals, houses subside, and the screen door doesn't fit quite The hedge apples grow, thorn and poison, in the way that they have. We collect them, comb the rivers and creeks, the margins of change, for things like glass bottles to exchange for bait money, catch other things that we want too, and all of my heroes were good at filleting fish. We were in the living room gathering stairs in boxes, pressed flat in books, and trying not to hide them, trying not to feel guilty about it.
She's so modern. Islands of light. The quality of light above a mesa town reminds me of the city of Venice. There aren't many places left where people have lived for a long time and where we haven't changed the light around and above the space. Light is usually the first thing to go. Sound is more noticeable, but also more malleable. Our machines can be silenced. Light is something different. Maybe it has to do with islands, places where cars don't work. When speed is rare, people give off a different kind of reflection. Cleaner, more clear, more thoughtful. I love living where I can see large distances across the earth. And I love the pale blue air above the mesa towns. Akama, Shuangmapovi, Third Mesa. When I think of them for a moment, I am my own island of light. Mm-hmm. Want another one like that?
Yeah.
Farm landscape with traveler, huh?
Do it again. Not that poem, but the one you know.
Yes,
okay,
well. We all try.
Farm landscape with traveler. In the back meadow in the spring, a fat brown and white cows and brilliant green fields look like a flag from some mountainous country. Stumbling into this remote land, I have come as a traveler and mender of nets of sensation. Draft horses in cold air stand in their morning hay. Their tails swing like huge opening fans, each blonde strand catching sunlight as it falls. Bees in the thousands navigate the pale fields in a symphony of work. Sweat cleans my brow as I weed between rows of tall corn and lose myself in a calculation of days between harvest and rain, between the end of one season and the beginning of the next. Evenings I swim in the icy clear waters of the lake. My body becomes numb and my mind soars into the gray vault of sky. Solitude blossoms into desire for your touch. We sit on the wooden steps of the store. Are you cutting hay this afternoon? Her black shiny hair hangs ready for disappointment. Hours hang heavy in the wrinkles around my eyes. I squint into a distance that is quietly moving away from us, a distance that is beginning to exist only in memory. A neighbor stands there in the field, her rifle and binoculars, and the alert brown dog at her side. I like this one. I'm sure she understands and is willing to pay the debt that comes from being a rancher. But I wonder how she can calculate so carefully that killing the coyote who's been eating her calves is not going to weaken the web that holds her children dear. Watermelon rind in the barnyard, picked clean by chickens, gnawed by a lazy cow. It won't be there at the end of winter when the cow turns and slips in the mud to keep from being herded into the barn. Herding gets caught in the blood, you know, like a secret sliver of hoof, entering a vein and dissolving. Like wind-driven rain dissolving muds in clots of snow. Morning sun bruises and puffs its way across the white and crackling fields. A sorrowful clock ticks in a country kitchen. Images are born of solitude, of work in open air. They lodge in the breastbone, brilliant flashes of landscape sustaining us.
We're right on the cusp right now of the change of the Aniuya months, the months for my dad's people. And the next one is the month of bones, mm-hmm, for us. So the funny part of this is I'm so high tech, right? Except I always forget that these things run on electricity. It's telling me I'm running out of gas.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Charging for it.
Yeah, no, I have a charging cord. I also have other books and notebooks full of handwritten things, so I'm not quite as high-tech as it looks. This is just something else. And now I've just made it go away from the
phone. Touch screens are double-edged.
This is awful.
Very impressive.
Yeah, isn't that impressive? All right, here we go. This is my John Cage moment.
It's
the new
it.
Wrestling of paper. I only miss you when you're here. Some afternoons peeking through the lens at images of Southport and every other thing is fine, but pictures of a place I've never been are making me cry. I only miss you when you're here. This week they're singing songs about John Lennon. We have to get more careful, more careful. Your details are perfect, and the dirt smells of Thursday's rain. I miss you so much when you're here, because I'm here, and the geometry is strange in the offhand way of houses that grow in spirals over years, and the funny put-away toys that we look at but don't play with. We don't ever play with them. Yeah. Headstones. That you might be a word like the feel of huckleberries on my tongue, the shiver and strange harmony of it, that you might be those longed-for fall afternoons and the visit to butterflies, the breakfast diner, and all that. You might be a drive over that pass, the headstones that say Limerick in marble carved by hand and by rain, that you might be the lemon and basil smell that clings to my hair today, that you might breathe for me.
That's so good.
Hmm? One more? You can do one more. And then it's your turn.
Okay.
Leg grown. Let's go dance a fall invocation into the beach sand, just where the cliffs and their attendant rocks provide punctuation. Let's dance until we're dusted like spice drops and the salt stings on our skin. Let's dance the butterfly migrations and the tay berries along this marveling coast, and then dance the spaces between, because all fantastic things dance. Every hug an oregano plant and some warmed wood deck with the periodic condor overhead. Let's dance fiercely like the grown women we are.
Well, we started out with travel. I'm just now catching up.
Are you?
Tourism. Low clouds shear across prairie hills like feathery glaciers in a wide sky. Big drops hit the windshield intermittently or crash down like an emptied bucket 6 inches in an hour and fill the streets up to the running boards of the cars. Pink-faced tourists in the gas station grocery jokes that maybe he's come at the wrong time, but he didn't really seem to find it funny. The new clerk, as a joke, rasps out a question. So did y'all make that rain this afternoon in them dances? She's tired of the late winter rains, and her voice isn't amused. I tell her the tribes in the southwest have the most rain ceremonies, put money for a pack of cigarettes on the counter, and stand at the door until a thunderstorm has passed. Running back down the wet road, I smile at the irony of jogging 2 miles to buy a pack of cigarettes. Later, I sit and watch TV on TV, the siege of the last hardliners in the Russian parliament. On the concrete bridge beneath the ramparts of the buildings, Moscovites gawk and walk their dogs, while tanks maneuver and bullets fly overhead. War has become an entertainment, and we are tourists strolling through a moment of history. It isn't even this peaceful in other quarters, Mexico City in 68, or Tiananmen, for instance. Passion and repression collided in death to produce the images of young people with signs, banners, and hope facing down rows of tanks and machine guns. Photos of courage and freedom flashed to all corners of the earth on the information web. Not unfamiliar news for American Indians. A hawk's shrill cry floats above the sounds of village life. Sometimes progress and the latest news seem irrelevant here. What is timeless has little need for progress, or even history, beyond the spoken memory. What we have to pass down is in the blood and in the way we treat each other, in our ability to see clearly what the Creator has placed here before us. Like Dr. Heisenberg with his uncertainty principle, we know we will change what we see, and we are respectful tourists on this wide earth. Let's see, a season poem. What I carry away. I sit on a sand-colored ledge under an inward-curving cliff. Song floats up on the wind. People have lived here since ancient times and live here now. In time, anything can bring grief or pleasure. Twist and glance back at its opposite. Crunch of tires on gravel in a winter cemetery. A single barking dog beyond the small woods. And the sound of this pencil on rough white paper. I hold inside me the color of dry grass and crickets in the bowl of summer heat. Caw of ravens in snow-damp branches, the solitude of a creek bed, and water running over sandstones, shifting pebbles. I remember the warmth of my mother's body holding me in her lap, my sister's tentative, brave smile, my father tossing bread to seagulls hovering at the beach. And there are women, bad and beautiful choices, gazing across at me, smiling, scowling, going blank, and leaving or not leaving soon enough, or coming back again and again. I have a child inside of me. His small hand touches my neck, trying to speak my language as I try to speak the language of my grandparents, and to see what we all have seen. Candles illuminate the bloody joy of birth. Candles put globes of light around the stillness of passing. It's quiet here, above the small river, above shimmering summer cottonwoods. I have only light waves, the scratch of the pencil, sensation and memory. We leave as we arrived, with nothing. What I carry away is what I have left behind. I am nourishment for the coming generations, part of the circle of life. A song rises up on the wing of the wind.
Beautiful. From this arroyo to the bay's mouth, in this season when the oceans press their eyes shut and taste the run and slouch of creeks, toss the stories that salt can tell, strain through the baleen of stones that those rivers have known, now and in other times, when the morning star had more names and the waters press and catch land in their net and other places. They can wait while they mutter minerals, coil and fold, and finally understand that they are filled. The wind map, creased and thumbed, the wonders that can drive a cloud from coast to mountain, how poem the warm wind, how muscle the wet cloud, mud by the bay laurel, mud and huckleberry promises. The creek is remembering, drop by reaching rootlet. There is something to know here, a thing that was once known. Doll's head and gritty coin, the broken blue and white teacup. We are tangle and deposition, bolted garden and bunch grass.
Huh? This is fun. I like this. Then we get political a little bit.
Huh?
Just gonna get political.
Oh yeah, no, we can go that way.
New York Times in the supermarket.
Somebody's got a question.
Yeah, before you get political, that's better than the last segment.
Yes.
You said something about we're in the cusp of the transition of months, and is that a month that's measured by the moment?
It's season.
The beginning?
Yeah, it's season. Essentially. Thank you. It's essentially measured by the full moon. Yeah.
So that would be considered the beginning.
Yeah, I developed when I was teaching college a resistance to using incredibly stereotypical native terms. So it actually does translate to bone moon, but that just sounds so Hollywood that I don't say it that way. But yes, it's full moon to full moon, so that's what it is.
Okay.
Can I ask a question about poetry?
Sure.
Yeah.
Who will answer?
Well, it's like a song when you guys read it, and so do you find that you don't do that? I know you edit it somehow, but when a person's really in poetry, doesn't a lot of editing just go out the window? Because it's such a feeling, right? More than editing.
Well, no, not really.
I rarely edit.
I edit all the time.
See, you don't. Okay.
I don't.
Because
you can probably tell the difference between our work.
No, honestly,
there are people who feel like they can tell that I don't. I kind of do this thing every morning. It's almost like Sumiya style painting. I just don't take the pen off the page and just write. And some of those poems will probably never be published that way, but I will read them that way because that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I have to say is that my tribal tradition has you do morning prayers, and they're in poem form.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear things like, there's no word for art in native languages, or there's no word for poetry in native languages. Of course there is. In Chalagi, it's irigaweshti. It means things to be said. And they are poems. I can prove that, because now I've got my little license for proving things about poems in the form of a degree. And so I am authoritatively saying here and now. And that I do that practice, and that's what that practice is. And you're right. They're almost songs. They're almost poems, and I don't edit.
That's cool.
Thank you.
She's a master, though.
Well, there are a couple master poets in this room. I could point out a few of them. A dozen long-stemmed poets.
Well, so your question is, do poets edit poetry?
Well, the reason I was asking that, because I myself love to write, and I'm finished with the book, but I haven't published it because I don't have an idea how you'll go about doing it. But I noticed, like someone said, Jimmy, you write so much better than you speak. And I feel like but then someone explained it to me, like when you right, you go in a certain direction, your mind isn't so global the way it is when you're speaking. You're kind of all over the place when I'm talking to people, but when I write, everything zooms in, and I just automatically edit, it seems like. But anyway, so I was just wondering, because I know you feel more like with poetry, it's you feel more. You feel something.
It kind of goes to the question of what is a poem, you know, like why do we poem? What is it, right? And someone in the room will know who this is, and I'm going to sound like a total novice. But somebody said about prayer that when you have exceeded the limitations of normal speech, you lapse into prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that is very true of poetry as well.
Okay.
When what is required in that moment is more than what you can say, you know. And the other thing that people always ask me is, who's your favorite poet? And I have an answer, and it sounds flippant, and I've been nailed about saying this a few times in interviews, but the fact is my favorite poet is Dr. Seuss.
Cool.
Because that is a poet who can make up words and you still know what he means. That's art.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cesar Vallejo does the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Cesar Vallejo is another one. There are a couple of people.
And Shakespeare,
Cesar Vallejo. Yeah.
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 Well, they sound that Shakespeare sounds so, it doesn't sound so new because we've been using it for so long. Cesar Vallejo was a...
what's the last name?
Cesar Vallejo.
Vallejo.
Like the sound over here. Amazing. Amazing.
Huh.
Right?
Amazing writer, yeah.
There poetry, sometimes, you know, I have a poem, Linda wants to hear it, so I'll read it, that was trying to get out for about 5 years. I would write these lines, and it just wouldn't fit in the poem I was doing, so I put it in a notebook. And 5 years later, I opened up this notebook, and there was this poem, amazing poem.
Wow.
So he'd been trying to get out for all those years. But where does poetry come from? I don't know. But you got to think about those things. You know, he had been trying all these years. I'll read it. All these years, okay. He had been trying to get out. And only the fact that I happened to write down all the lines that didn't fit in other poems, and later looked at it, so this is what I saw. A note on the modern world. A crumpled piece of paper with symbols on it. A canyon wall with symbols on it. A skyscraper wall with graffiti on it. How small we are. How large. Have I forgotten how to be noble, how to walk barefoot? What did he say to one another when we sat in a room watching... What did we say to one another before we sat in a room watching TV? I cross one leg over the other and sit civilized and mute. Have I forgotten how to sit on the earth and to sing and tell stories? We are too many. Will we forget who we are? We could say they were lucky. They had rivers, canyon walls, traditions old as the sun. But we cannot cross back over the confusion of days, that time without memory or song. It's buried in snow at wounded knee, or lost across oceans in barren fields. And we have our cities. Cities fascinate and disturb me. I can't help it. There's so many of us. Confidently we march past one another. We strive, we work, we love. We're defiant, aggressive. We spell each emotion, each nuance correctly. We've provided the spirits of the woods with electricity, put radios popping tunes on the shoulders of shamans. And when we blunder, my God, it's genius, we turn it into $1 million. I'm a bitter fool to begrudge us this. How spiteful, how sanctimonious. How dare I complain? How dare I remember the damp smell of dark earth, the blackness of sky lit only by stars, the white seed of cottonwood trees floating on the wind like light, aimless birds. Of course, I'm saying this only because I'm poor, or because my people were once overwhelmed. But that's not it. Allow me to remove my face. Here, hold it by the ears. Now you can see the white bone of skull and teeth. Yes, this is the way I am, full of kindness and contemplation, smiling out at the world from an elemental stance. Now I see clearly the twin globes spinning in their sockets, the many billions of us spinning in our bodies, in our hearts and minds. Each day now we spin faster. We wobble and sway with the speed and wind. The Stone Age and the next century meet daily in our valleys and streets. We are some of us so different that not even gesture can cross the great silence. We are at all stages at once. The ape and the spaceman touch on a full circle. The diametrically opposed meet, rich and poor, view each other's excesses, shamefaced and angry. It is only natural to meet life with such passion. How can any one of us, born as we are from contradiction, escape the tide that flows around and through us? The day is about to end, like a poor man thrown out of his house, like sobbing of the earth at the edge of the flood. The light is turning dark. The gods are stepping down, changing places. Between the walls of the canyon, the river draws to itself, the domain of shadow and reflection. Large we are, how small. And that was just lines that didn't fit anywhere else. Is there? Where did that come from?
That's one of the great joys of actually writing longhand, too, mm-hmm. is that when you edit things on a piece of text, which is why, okay, I have all of that, and then I have a notebook, because that's how I really write, you know. I do this essentially because I teach younger people and they take you more seriously. It's also not as big a stack of junk to drag around, if you, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Are we about done?
I think we are.
Okay, I want to end with this one then. I know who I'd call if I wanted forged river pebbles this morning. It was borrowed memories of mortar stones by the Hiwassee and a sound in my wrist bones that I couldn't identify. With 20 and change years of listening, there was this fingertip memory of curves that I believe my eyes have seen, but will have to bead if I ever want to really recognize. There are these moments when I'm glad of the still quiet pecan trees by the Neosho who mention me from time to time. And even more valley oak and wild rose, the city raccoon music on my roof, and this trickster fog, less blown in by the suggestive Pacific, and more drawn, coaxed, by the promise of August in the valley. It's such a specific language, this business of a life. Mm-hmm. You know those. They know you,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
Speak on trees. Yeah.
We used to gather them.
Would you repeat that last line, please?
It's such a specific language, this business of a life.
Language mm-hmm. sort of tied to place often.
Mm-hmm.
You're on Facebook page, right?
I do.
Right. I'm going to write every day.
I write almost every day. Not this week. I'm crazy
really?
This week. I'm crazy this week.
Yeah, it has been. My nephew's girlfriend ended up at the emergency room last night at about 2 in the morning. So I'm a little out of it. But it is curious how we're able to bomb any place on the planet, and yet we can't take care of our own kids here.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We have to chip them.
Hmm?
We have to chip them so we know where
they are. We know where they are. We can track them.
Tracking's
not a problem.
Exactly.
No, it's a cool thing whenever Duane and I read together, though, because there is a way in which we did not know each other until adulthood, but we grew up in a lot of the same ways.
And
so
same
there's
places.
There's an interesting rhyming that
mm-hmm.
goes on between our work, and you're seeing it maybe half a generation apart, and a couple maybe 20 miles apart.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, maybe slightly different seasons.
Slightly different seasons,
but same views.
It's so incredible to see your diversity. Like, there's your art.
Yeah, yeah.
On the floor with mm-hmm. all those papers, mm-hmm. and even though you were joking about yours,
let's do
like
it right.
You both have a way.
Yeah.
I've
she's
got paper.
Hers in there.
I got paper.
Aha! This is all facade.
Yeah.
It's not all facade. It actually lets me carry a whole lot more of this.
Mm-hmm.
But that, and I'm teaching tomorrow,
that's
so I'm trying to remember how to use the bloody tool. Which they require me
really?
To use.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. No, I'm teaching at the college now. They were like, what do you mean? And I, what do you write with? And I went.
But I edit with a computer. It's beautiful. You can change anything and change it back.
Yeah, you can even make a file to save the extra lines.
Yeah, that's
uh-huh. yeah, exactly.
That'd be modern.
Or you can just save each version.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know.
And go back to it.
Yeah.
See, but there's something, there's meditation to writing it out longhand, and I do that.
Yeah, me too.
Right?
Always write it longhand.
Always.
Like for me, I have an incredible problem memorizing.
Mm-hmm.
Someone could tell me this whole thing, and it's just out. It just goes. But if I can see it, I get it. I remember it, you know.
You feel it in, you know, it's that thing about in your wrist bones. You feel it.
Yeah.
You feel the rhythm of it.
Yeah.
It's really important, I think. I don't know. I don't remember if that's one of the things you taught me in class. There were a couple of things, serious things, that I have retained.
Mm-hmm.
And also I realized while you were reading that I stole a line from you, just completely stole it.
Oh,
absolutely ripped it off.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't read that poem because of it. It's a line about the color you look for in somebody's eyes, and I think I probably stole it because I believe the poem came after hearing you read that in class.
That happened. But that happened.
I didn't mean to. But it's in my first
we forgive
book.
Each other. It's all I
yeah, know. No, it's true.
Sherman Lexie confessed to stealing that line. That's all right, Sherman. You were up against the deadline, right?
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
He's so gracious.
Where does it come? It's not mine anyway. You know, it's just work.
Where do they come from?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that idea Gurdjieff had about ideas being up there, and every now and then we can reach up
it's
and grab them.
The balloon string.
Yeah.
So I find
like
myself wondering, if you go home, what happens when you go home, and if you two have ever been home together?
No, not together.
Exactly. Not physically, but
no.
Yeah, about many years, poetically, suppose.
Sure. I go home a lot. I was home in last June.
You mean home back to Oklahoma?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I was home last June. I have family there. I have a lot. Yeah. I was, you know that window where there was a week where there was no rain?
Yeah.
That's when I was there. There, it was really, it was, I want to say a bad word. It was seriously coming down rain. Let's say it that way. Not a bad word. It was really raining as we were landing at Tulsa, and the sun came out as we were landing. And then, you know, and it was flooding everywhere and everything. And then we drove around northeastern Oklahoma, and I was with Mary Jean Robertson, mm-hmm. who is sort of from there, but she's not from up by Grand Lake, and I kind of am. And so she's going, it's not that flooded. I'm like, you see that sign there, that parking sign, and like 20 feet out from the shore? That is generally not
underwater.
20 feet out from the shore. Also, I think when you see street lights that are halfway up on them with water, that's usually an indication that the water's not generally there. So for a whole week, we're looking at these things, right? And she's like, what's going on? I'm like, you see the hay bale floating by? There's been a lot of water. It takes a bit of water to float one of those.
Jeez.
Do you see
I was
this?
There at the same time.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
It's like you see the squirrel out. On it? The sun came
really?
Out. Yeah. There was
a
squirrel on a floating hay bale, and you could kind of see that it was sort of trying to figure out.
Oh, no.
The moment will come, and I will be able. No, it's a lake. He's going to come to shore. Oh. But you could sort of see he was like. It's really not what I planned this morning when I woke up. And then we got on the plane and we're taking off into a rainstorm. It was hilarious. Mm. This is how you get stories told about you in Oklahoma.
She brought the sun.
And then I took it away with me.
Linda, would you like to share a poem with us?
Oh, thank you, but I'm not prepared.
Okay.
I have one of
these poems. This is an amazing young woman here.
Oh, this lady.
Please.
Oh, stop.
This is another one. These two, it is a huge crushing ache in me that this one and this one don't have a whole book that I can pack with me and take along. Which is the only really good excuse for doing them these
That's
days. I'm embarrassing the book. Remember when I said at the top of the hour that the best way to really make Indian kids uncomfortable is to have us introduce one another?
Right.
Well, here's my advertisement for these two.
For who?
Huh?
For who?
Huh?
Who are you introducing?
Well, I'm not. But I'm doing advertisements for both of them.
The nameless.
Thank you.
Linda Noel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But they know who that is.
The rest of the room doesn't.
Linda Noel is an incredible poet.
Incredible.
And just
overwhelmingly a good spirit
wonderful.
There. Boy, that looks a big light shining up.
Always.
Look at India turn red.
My her last name? Noel?
That's a good title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I know.
Well, thank you too.
You've done it to me.
Oh, I see.
and thank you on behalf of many rivers.
Thank you for having us. Really good. The best audiences.
Oh, yeah. It makes a big difference, you know.
It really does.
Well, I want to point out two things. First, we have a bunch of Kim's books right over here for you to take a look at. So please do.
I was reading out of it.
Right. And also another one as well.
That's semi-autobiographical. Mm.
And then we have the donation bowl over there, and we encourage you to contribute to that bowl. We retain half to maintain this space for further such events and share the rest with our speakers.
Good luck.
And thank you all for coming tonight.
Thank you
good
so much for having me. People are here.
I can hear
Kim's record. I want to read. I have to hear some of your poems again. I think there's no book. with Kim via.
I know, right?
List some books. It won't be in the same because you're read. Well, how about the poems? Like, what's better than that?
You can kind of look him up and piece it together because I had to for my students last semester. For him, you can, you know, find them. But I'm seriously, someone needs to publish the whole book of your work.
They gotta pay me.
Huh?
They gotta pay me.
I know they've gotta pay you. I agree.
Well, it's just necessary for the legacy.
Yeah. That
voice,
that's
an important voice. But I think
I always recommend you for things.
I think.
So much. So is that as soft as it looks? Your scarf? Is that scarf as soft as it looks?
Is it
as soft as it looks?
Yeah, it's kind of woolly, actually. It's kind of woolly.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
It's warm. We couldn't get her to read anything. She didn't bring anything.
No, but she'll probably be back. I'm hoping they invite her back.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, when you do an advertisement like that in front of the people who make the choice.
Good,
yeah.
Now you have to figure out where everything goes.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Because you were just kind of going like that, and I was like, uh-oh, that one just went with another ballpark. But he's probably used to doing it that way.
I don't heard that often.
Chris, no, you don't? Oh my gosh, really? I'm really glad I came. And I was going to be late. I was late making dinner, and I was tired, and I worked really hard. And I'm like, no, I gotta go.
Poetry does rejuvenate you a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Good poetry rejuvenates you a little bit.
Totally. And when the poets read them, they're on the phone. What could be better than that? It's like dreaming. You know? It's like a dream.
I just want to say thanks to everyone.